Almost from its inception in the late 1960s, the Environmental Protection Agency has been driven by research. In fact, the EPA's R&D campus in North Carolina's Research Triangle houses 15 offices, and it's the largest EPA facility ever built. Ron Williams is a senior research chemist in the Office of Research and Development. He told Federal News Radio's Tom Temin more about some of the projects being developed at that lab.
We're involved in a wide range of research activities. Two that I'd like to mention specifically, Tom, is our air sensors toolbox. We have seen in the last 5 years an explosion of small, highly portable, fairly low-cost sensor technologies that citizens are engaging in or wish to engage in terms of collecting air quality information for themselves. These devices have the ability to go there and measure in real time often. They typically are, again, fairly inexpensive, many of them on the order of hundreds of dollars as compared to regulatory monitors that cost more. But again, these are first-generation devices that many manufacturers are interested in providing, and we're trying to work with both the manufacturers and the public at large and interested parties in these technologies and their application for a wide variety of uses. And that includes education, sensors that have the ability to go there and indicate the presence of a pollutant, and showing school-age children and high schoolers and even collegians some of these technologies as they're being developed and their potential application for a wide range of uses. We also have an understanding that many citizens are interested in collecting data in their own communities, and we're trying to provide them best practices and understanding of these technologies and how well they can be applied. And one of the ways we do that...
Well, before we get to that, just tell us more about these technologies. Is this something like the size of a cigarette package, or is it the size of a car? What are we talking about, and where do people obtain these types of devices?
Tom, that's a good question. We see technologies, and where we're spending the vast majority of our time, is the area of highly portable, small devices. Many of these are as small as a roll of quarters, up to the size of, let's just say, a... 4-inch by 6-inch by 7-inch, the size, say, a house brick, to put it in general terms. We see many devices falling within that range. They typically weigh less than a pound. Many of them are powered by devices like lithium-ion batteries, and they have a capability of running from the outer hours of maybe 4 hours up to approximately a day. But they are highly portable, and in many cases, they have the ability to wirelessly transmit data. That is, they may use a Wi-Fi signal. They may use a cellular telephone signal so that people are able to go there and collect data in real time and actually see and visualize that data in real time.
So this is the Internet of Things going into the air quality effort.
Oh, very much so. And that, of course, that ease of data collection, immediate results, the public is very interested in that. And we in EPA are interested in that, too. And we have a large number of projects that are trying to take advantage of these ability to go there and use some of the advances in telecommunication and the ability that you might not have to be connected to a telephone wire or some other sort of communication to actually be able to collect data and acquire it and store it and do all kinds of things with it. It represents a great, significant advance that we're trying to take advantage of.
All right, and so how would the data, so if I'm a private citizen and I have this interest and there's a community of people like me around the country, how does that information, the data my device collects, get into the EPA, and what does that do to further EPA's air quality mission?
We're not actually harvesting or storing or presenting citizen data at this time. It's a very complex question. As we explain to people, these sensors and technologies, even though they have been miniaturized and they're small, there's not a format. There are literally scores and scores of manufacturers who are developing these devices, but there's often not a common communication format by which data is released. That is, some have different types of communication architecture. So just in thinking about trying to harvest data, if that's the term to be used, or even acquire or find a means to go there and store data and release it to others, is a very, very complex question. Currently, we have no ability to do that. We're thinking about how one might do that, and we're asking the questions, and we have lots of conversations with manufacturers saying that if a common data format was provided to across the manufacturing platforms, that would certainly make that question that you asked easier to consider, but as of this time, is something we're considering, but we're not actually trying to do that. There is something that we have in EPA called a community of practice regarding this technology, and We have lots of great minds thinking about how do we go there and help advance and promote and understand this whole realm of technology that's, again, moving quite fast but does have its unique issues associated with it. The question that you asked about a minute ago, dealing with how are we looking at some of this data, maybe the best example I can share with you right now is one of our projects called the Village Green. And, in fact, I'm online right now looking at the air quality at the Smithsonian Zoo, the National Zoo, where we have a Village Green station. And the PM concentration, the amount of fine particulate matter in the air, is at 8 micrograms per cubic meter. And we've got winds blowing out of the north at the northeast at almost a mile an hour. And this is one of our ways of getting to that question. How does one go there and take real-time data being collected by advanced technologies and share it with the public? And the Village Green is one of the ways we're doing that.
Ron Williams is Senior Research Chemist in the Office of Research and Development at the EPA. So Village Green then is taking in data that does have a format that you can collect, and these are sensors placed by EPA or by other institutions?
Actually, placed by EPA, but with a large amount of community partners. We have, of course, partnering with the National Zoo. We're partnering with the state of Virginia. We're partnering with local air quality groups in Virginia. We also have a station in Philadelphia on the National Historic Mall, partnering with, again, the National Park Service and our region that supports the Philadelphia area and other partners in the Philadelphia area. Likewise, we have multiple partners in our stations at Kansas City and our stations in Durham, North Carolina, and our station that will be deployed maybe as early as next week in Oklahoma City. And we've got two more stations, one in Hartford, Connecticut, and one in Chicago, Illinois, that we hopefully will be bringing online. And in all of these situations, we have developed the architecture and the data formatting by which we can take data from sensors and go there and provide a telecommunications protocol and wireless stream them to a data portal, a server. And one of the unique things about the Village Green project is that it's totally self-sustaining. That is, totally powered by the sun or the wind. And these stations operate nearly flawlessly, 24 hours a day, 365 days a week, once we get them established. And that's a partnership, again, between EPA and local partners who are interested in, again, in advancing technologies and providing real-time data to local citizens.
I imagine at the zoo, the air quality probably varies according to the feeding cycle of the animals.
Well, we're mostly interested in a number of pollutants. One is ozone, and the other is fine particulate matter, because those are two of our pollutants that we call criteria pollutants that we monitor routinely across the nation. And so we provide those two air quality indices. And those are the two that we're typically focusing on across all of the U.S. and the stations that we're deploying, because, again, those are criteria pollutants and ones that we're interested in and that citizens are aware of. Both of those pollutants, ozone and fine particulate matter, provide data into our EPA's air quality index so that when people see their nightly news and their meteorologist says tomorrow's going to be a red action day, well, ozone and particulate matter are two of the pollutants that go there and guide that air quality index. So we want to make sure people understand what the data, how it goes there and feeds into the air quality index, because those are very important features that we've proudly provide to the American public.
Now, many years have passed. The EPA collects data from regulated sources. This is, you know, the original EPA. And can you envision a day when a lot of the apparatus involved in having regulated emitters and so forth report to the EPA, just automating it all so nobody has to do anything except have a sensor up and running and the data is automatically downloaded by the hour or by the minute?
Certainly, we have an interest in how far this technology can be advanced. And certainly when we have conversations with stakeholders, and stakeholders include the public as well as industry and municipalities, one is always looking for advances that one might be able to go there and do something cheaper and faster and of higher quality and more of it. And so while there's not an immediate ability to us to do exactly what you just asked, that certainly is something that we have interest in and which others have interest in. The key is making sure that the technology will actually do what it needs to do, that it is accurate enough, that it is reliable enough, and that the measurement that it takes is representative of what we need for it to be representative of.
And is there any indication on the horizon that similar technologies, cheap and deployable, would be available for water?
Funny you should say that, Tom. We've been investigating, you know, our resources on the air side for literally just about 2.5 years to try to understand this whole area of the air sensors and what they can and might be applicable for. But we also have the same interest in water, and we are looking into providing resources and investing people and our energies into water monitoring for real time. It's just that it's not as far along as the work that we're doing in air, but our interest is definitely there, and it'll catch up very, very quickly.
And where can citizens interested in this go for more information?
They go to two primary websites. One, if they simply Google US EPA and the Village Green, they will be able to go there and look at a multiple array of cities and look at real-time quality, air quality, and the technologies that we have employed there. And if they go there and Google simply these words, Air Sensors Toolbox, that website literally is accessed tens of thousands of times per month, and many of the information products that we have provided there that talk about low-cost sensors and how they might be used and their applicability for a wide variety of settings, some of those have been accessed and recovered over 100,000 times, literally in just the last couple of months. And so it certainly has struck what would seem to be a nerve of people who are interested in these technologies, and the agency is doing, an excellent job of trying to go there and share information as soon as we can make it available with the general public and all other stakeholders about these emerging technology areas.